I want you all to listen up. This is important stuff, all right?
John Canzano is on Sports Radio 750, The Game.
Okay, here we go.
The bald-faced truth.
Call 503-417-7575 or 877-733-0750 or text to 95595.
Here we go in 3, 2.
Now, in for John Canzano with the Blitz Sports Pubs Happy Hour. Here's Fletcher Johnson on 750 The Game.
Well, Blazers were busy over the holiday weekend. Add Robin Lopez, Earl Watson, Darrell Wright, all obviously contingent on getting to July 10th so that they can make those all official. But Blazers looking to round out that bench after having one of the worst benches, if not the worst bench in the league last year. And they add some pieces here over the long holiday weekend. Fletch in for Canzano here as we begin hour three on a Monday. I'll be in all week long for John, who has the week off. Thanks for spending your time with me here today. And now we go out to a gentleman you know very well. First came to your attention when I was writing for Blazers Edge. Still does that, but now writes for SportsIllustrated.com as well, covering all things NBA and Blazers as well. It's Ben Golliver with us. Ben, tell me you got to have a hot dog, a beer, something on the 4th of July. I know you were staying busy.
You know, I actually did. I had a nice couple hours there with my brothers. Actually, my parents were in Europe, so it was nice to catch up with my brothers, and we got a little hot dogs, and it was good.
Well, that's good, because I know that not only the Blazers, but everybody keeping you busy on the holiday. Let's start with the acquisition of Robin Lopez for the Blazers. Your thoughts on what the five-year pro brings to Portland?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a B move. I don't think it's bad by any stretch of the imagination at all. And I think in general, when you look at Neil Oshoa's summer, he avoided any sort of big overcommitments to players. He avoided disaster, and that's always step one. You look around at the NBA, you look at a team like Milwaukee Bucks, a couple other teams out there, they didn't avoid disaster. So I think you got to give the Blazers credit for not going down that path. In terms of Lopez, you know, ultimately, I think the idea of Lopez is actually a little bit better than the player. I don't think he's that good. I think he's pretty mediocre. I think if you stack him up against the starting centers in the NBA, you know, he's probably one of the 5 or 10 worst starting centers in the NBA. So you got to kind of factor that in. That said, he does something the Blazers obviously need, which is protecting the rim. They didn't have that presence last year. You know, J.J. Hickson was just allowing a dunk parade game after game after game, and so that should be shored up a little bit. That was a clear need. He does address that need. I think there's going to be question marks, though, with a lot of other parts of his game. You know, he's not very mobile. He's not a very mobile team defender. He can help a little bit, you know, on drives, but he's not going to be great in the pick and rolls. He's not going to be able to extend very well, so that's going to create problems for your team defense. As we know, team defense was a huge issue for the Blazers last year, and you really need to have a solid team defender back there because you got a lot of young guards in Damian Lillard, C.J. McCollum coming up, who are going to need help. So that's going to be an issue. And I also think the fit on offense is a little bit questionable. I mean, one aspect of J.J. Hickson's game, and everybody knows I wasn't the biggest J.J. Hickson fan, one aspect of his game, though, is he did have a little bit of range. He could, you know, start up in good mobility. He could start up by the free throw line, crash hard to the glass. And if they wanted to use LaMarcus Aldridge down there in the low post, they could do a little bit of high-low spacing that way. Now, Lopez doesn't really have a ton of mid-range game out like that. He's not very mobile. So what he can do for you is, you know, take a little dump pass and finish around the basket. You know, he's pretty good in the rim area. That's sort of the extent of his offense. He's not going to be a major offensive force. You don't necessarily need a lot of scoring from him, but the spacing is going to be an issue because, you know, potentially if he's always around the basket, is there going to be enough room for LaMarcus Aldridge to operate in the low post? I think that's going to be a question mark. And as we know, Aldridge is way better and more efficient when he's down there by the basket as opposed to shooting those mid-range jumpers. So, to me, there's some question marks, but all in all, like I said, not a bad contract. It's not too long. It's about the right price for, you know, a big man his size. I think ultimately he's a better pickup than a guy like a Zaza Pachulia or even a Chris Kaman. I think he makes a little bit more sense. So, you know, I give it a B, but there's definitely going to be some issues and some question marks in terms of, you know, is he going to be able to play big minutes? He's never really done it before. Last year he played a lot of games, but he only played 26 minutes a night. If that's going to be the case next year, that means you're relying on Myers Leonard for a lot. And he's still a question mark as well entering his second season.
I said early on in the show, the thing that I remember of Robin Lopez is not his time in the NBA, but his time at Stanford, where he was kind of the goofball compared to his brother, who was and has shown to be in the NBA the much more polished player of the two twins. He was kind of more of an enforcer who would go out there and get crazy. Does this seem almost like a short-term fix for the Blazers just to add some depth in that front court as they kind of survey their options here over the course of the next few years?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of a hedge against, you know, possibly, you know, what could happen with LaMarcus Aldridge in terms of whether he wants out or not. No question about it. I think, you know, you needed a center number one, so that's why he's here. And, you know, being able to pick him up and really giving minor assets as opposed to having to trade one of your core players to go get a center, which was maybe one of the other options, or overpaying for a restricted free agent. I mean, those are sort of the options available this summer. I think, you know, going out and snagging a guy like Lopez does make a little bit of sense. But, you know, the fact that he's not going to be on a long-term commitment and maybe he's not really necessarily your center of the future, so to speak, it gives you a little bit of flexibility when you look forward, you know, a year or two, just depending on how things play out with Aldridge.
Dwight Howard decides he's going to join the Houston Rockets. What do you make of the decision? I mean, it seemed like from the beginning that Houston was the leading contender for his services, so maybe not necessarily as much of a surprise in that sense.
I can tell you right now, I'm so happy it's over. You know, I've been covering Dwight Howard rumors now for a solid 2 years of my life. I can't tell you how many words I've wasted, how many hours I've wasted on this guy. And I'm so glad it's over. So, you know, that standpoint, he can't be a free agent for, I guess, at least 3 years until he can opt out. So that gives us at least 2 years without rumors. So that's just gravy. I'm so happy. I can't tell you how stoked I am, Fletch. But, you know, past that, you know, it was clearly that Houston did absolutely everything right to court him, right? I mean, you just look at their process in terms of how they assembled an all-star in James Harden to sort of be the hook to kind of intrigue Howard, how they had a coach that made all sorts of sense in terms of having a Hall of Fame resume himself, an all-star resume in Kevin McHale, who could kind of communicate to Howard on a different level. They had a GM who was really into technology and really trying to push the envelope in those ways, you know, coming at Dwight Howard on Instagram, on YouTube, on Twitter. I mean, every possible way you can kind of you know, go after a player in terms of your recruitment. He did that, and I think, you know, Dwight Howard appreciates all that attention. I think that's pretty well known at this point. And then I think, you know, they really had a good roster in terms of the minor assets, guys like Chandler Parsons on affordable contracts, you know, flexible assets in terms of Ashik and Jeremy Lin, who could potentially be moved in the future if you're trying to acquire maybe a third star to put alongside Harden and Howard. So to me, you know, everything kind of lines up. You know, the fact that they were able to make a jump up into the playoffs this season definitely helped because it kind of made them seem even more attractive. But ultimately, a lot of this was about the Lakers just not being that great of a spot for them anymore. You look, I mean, their season's going to be dumped next year. And we talk about the Blazers having a pretty good offseason. One of the reasons why the Blazers have had a good offseason relative to some other teams in the West is because the Lakers just totally fell off a cliff. I mean, that's going to be a team that's going to be in the lottery basically no matter what. I think Denver's had a pretty bad offseason, too. That could be a team that could potentially be down there in the lottery. So all of a sudden, some playoff spots are starting to open up for Portland to compete with. And if you're a Blazers fan, that's what you like to see. But there's just such a mess down there in L.A. in terms of Kobe trying to come back, the huge dollars they have to pay to Kobe, Gasol, and world peace. I mean, that's just a tough situation. I don't blame Dwight Howard at all for leaving the Lakers after one season. There's so many things about Houston are better than L.A. right now.
It really interesting as well, because Dwight Howard chose the Rockets, as many people had kind of thought might happen, Omer Ashik not happy and has requested a trade to the Rockets front office and GM Daryl Morey. What are you seeing out of that situation? Do you think there's going to be any movement there, or is Houston going to stand strong and not trade Ashik?
Well, I mean, look at it this way, Fletch. Imagine if, like, your assistant gopher at the radio station was demanding a trade. What would you say? I mean, are you going to flinch? Are you really going to care too much? Say, just go back and do your job, man. Yeah, we'll talk about it later. And I think that's sort of the Rockets' approach at this point is, okay, Omer, who are you to be demanding a trade? You can just kind of deal with it on our time. And I think what you don't want to do is, I mean, he's a very valuable asset. He's one of the best defensive centers in the NBA. He's not great on offense. But he's, you know, much like Lopez, you know, he's proved to be very durable, and he's actually a much more productive rebounder than a Lopez is. That's a nice piece to have. I put him in probably the top 15 centers in the NBA. You don't give that kind of an asset away, no matter what. You have to give value back. And so if you're the Rockets, you're not in a huge rush to give it away. You know, you enter next season, if you don't trade him, having the best center combination in the entire NBA, and you start to, you know, see what kind of deals you can get out there. And they should be able to get all sorts of good assets for a player like that. And I think, you know, they're just going to do whatever they can to kind of tell him to chill out a little bit. I understand his frustration because he was in Chicago backing up Noah for a couple of years. He finally got his shot in Houston. Everything was going great. And now here comes this, you know, superstar in ahead of him on the depth chart. And I also share the concerns that he has, which is, you know, it probably is not going to work great if they play together at the same time. Even if you put all sorts of shooters on the court, it's going to be tough to kind of have that Twin Towers approach and have it work. But to me, I think if you're Houston, you've got all the time in the world. The worst thing you can do right now, right after landing a superstar like Dwight Howard, is rush into the next move before you really have time to think about it and before you have a chance to weigh all the available options.
Ben Golliver, SI.com, BlazersEdge.com, with us here on 750 The Game. Elliot Williams, couple seasons lost due to knee injuries, unrestricted free agent. What do the Blazers do?
Well, I mean, they don't necessarily have a roster spot for him anymore. You know, they got 14 contracts, plus one guy on a non-guaranteed deal who will probably get cut. So that basically makes for one spot. They've got a room exception, which they can offer to somebody, which is $2.6 million per year starting salary up to 2 years. So you could potentially add, you know, a veteran to your bench if Neil O'Shea decides he's not done yet, so in which case, you know, there wouldn't be any room for an Elliot Williams, you know, or Luke Babbitt or any of these other guys who sort of haven't signed yet. You know, so at that point, it kind of seems like the writing's on the wall. Also, when you look at their draft, you know, if they go ahead and keep Crabbe, you know, their second-round pick who they traded up to get, you know, at that point, you've got so much depth at that two-guard position because, to me, C.J. McCollum's a two. You know, Wesley Matthews is obviously a two. I see Will Barton as a two. I'm not sure he's a great two, but he's certainly in that mix as well, and he was drafted by O'Shea. So all of a sudden, you've got, plus Crabbe, so you've got four guys there who are all going to be potentially above Williams on the depth chart. So it sounds to me like, you know, it's time to get your walk on. And really, he's not even on the summer league roster, and that's a big indication too. So I think it's bye-bye Elliot. Unfortunately, one of the nicest, most intelligent players I've ever seen, you know, young guys coming out of college. I mean, this guy was a chess, you know, maniac. He could play like 10 games of chess at once. He's clearly very intelligent. I'm not exaggerating about that, by the way. He really could. I mean, he could literally just go up and down a line sort of like Bobby Fischer and play, you know, 10 games of chess at once. I mean, that's something he would do with the Blazers in terms of their community service outreach. So it's tough to see him go, but I think at this point the writing's on the wall.
So what you're saying is he has a future in something after basketball, basically.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, yeah, he's so it's, I think he has a future in basketball, too. Let's not write him off yet. I mean, yeah. The talent, he would have probably been, I think, had he been healthy, not blown out his Achilles last year, I think he probably would have been Portland's best reserve player. He would have been their sixth man. The flashes he showed the previous season before he ended up suffering that shoulder injury were definitely there. He looked like he could be a solid two-guard off a bench for somebody. Is he going to be able to put it together in time before training camp to get a deal? I don't know, but he's going to play somewhere. If it's not here, it's in the D-League, and he's going to try to get, you know, called up that way, or potentially could be in Europe as well.
Earl Watson and Darrell Wright also added over the weekend. Couple guys that have minimum of 9 years in the league. Darrell Wright, 9 years. Earl Watson, 12 years. Watson not playing significant minutes over the past couple seasons with Utah. These two moves, Wright obviously brings in a little bit more of an offensive game, but what do you see in these two?
Yeah, I mean, Watson's one of those guys, they call him like NGCPs. You know, nice guys can't play. I mean, that's basically where he's at this point of his career. That's no knock on him.
Yeah.
He's had a very productive NBA career. He can pass the ball, but, you know, this is the Ronnie Price role that we've seen before. You know, he's not even as good as Eric Maynor, and Eric Maynor was one of the worst guards in the NBA last year. You know, no knock on him. That's what the numbers say. So, you know, his role is going to be very limited. If he's playing a lot, it's going to be a big problem for the Blazers. In terms of Darrell Wright, I think if you're actually grading that contract signing, as a pure signing, that might be Portland's best move of the summer, just in terms of the value for the dollars. They caught him, you know, coming off of a down year in Philadelphia where he was one of a number of guys who kind of just didn't really get along with Coach Doug Collins. I mean, you probably remember Doug Collins' crazy post-game press conference rant where he's just going off on his entire team. I mean, he just sort of lost control during the middle of that season. He never really found the right rotations. He didn't value what Wright brings to the game, which is stretching the floor and shooting three-pointers. Philly had a really stupid offense last year. It was basically Jrue Holiday and nobody else. And they were shooting all sorts of mid-range jumpers and just really low-efficiency shots. Didn't have anybody who could really get to the rim. It was just kind of a mess. And that's why Doug Collins isn't there. And that's why they brought in a new GM. And they brought in they will be bringing in a new coach. I mean, they had to do a total you know, cleaning house there just because of what a mess it was last season because they didn't have Andrew Bynum, too. So you look at that. That means Wright is probably a pretty solid asset that you could you know, pull out of a bad situation and hope with the change of scenery he's going to be able to get back to doing what he does best, which is really shoot the three ball. I think he's going to have a limited role off the bench. You know, he's going to be backing up Nicholas Batum. I think he's pretty much a pure three in my eyes. I'm not sure he can play a ton of different positions, but you know, they might use him in various small ball lineups. He's not afraid to shoot it. You know, he's not going to struggle from the Luke Babbitt syndrome of getting on the court and wondering like, oh no, am I going to be able to do this? You know, he's going to go out there and be confident and jack up some shots. And really what you're seeing is he's part of an overall shift on this year's roster towards lots of three-point shooting. I mean, if you're a Blazers fan, get ready to see them shoot a lot of three-pointers, like Golden State Warriors level of three-pointers per game. They've got so many guys who can chuck it up from deep, whether it's Lillard, Matthews, Batum, McCollum, Crabbe, and now Darrell Wright. All those guys are shooters, and they're going to all have total green lights, I'm sure, from Terry Stotts.
It sounds great to me. Last thing for Ben Golliver of SI.com, BlazersEdge.com. J.J. Hickson, we mentioned Denver earlier. J.J. Hickson signs a three-year, $15 million deal with the Nuggets. How surprising is that? Didn't seem like there was a big market for Hickson, at least publicly.
Well, hey, I don't think that's a huge deal. You know, three years, $15 million. I mean, I wouldn't have given him 3 years if I was a GM just because, you know, you got to worry, is he going to be able to bring the same intensity he had during a contract season for 3 years? I'm not sure he would. But $5 million sounds about right. It's not the $7 million that he was kind of hoping he would be able to get. And so, you know, if you're Denver, I'm not sure the fit there roster-wise. I don't know really where he's going to plug in with their front line. What Denver's done this summer has made really no sense to me. You let George Karl go, mistake. You let Masai Ujiri go to Toronto, that's a mistake. You bring in a first-time GM who has no time to prepare for free agency, that's tough. You know, you bring in a first-time head coach, with, you know, he's had all sorts of questions about how come he hasn't been able to get that full job with Brian Shaw. That's a question mark. I'm not sure it's a mistake yet, but it's a question mark. You let Iguodala go. That's definitely a bad move. You had to bring him back if you wanted to keep this core team together. And then bringing in Hickson to a front line, you know, that already has Fareed doesn't make a ton of sense to me. Neither one of those guys is a great defensive standout. They're kind of all offense players. And then trading Kostas Koufos was a dumb move, too. I don't know what they're doing with that. I think he's one of the best rebounders per minute in the NBA. So to me, their whole summer has been kind of a mess, and that's one reason why I think they do fall out of that elite level in the Western Conference, and potentially they could fall all the way out of the playoff picture.
Ben Golliver, you're the best. Thanks, as always, for the time, and we'll keep an eye on your stuff, SI.com, BlazersEdge.com as well. Thanks for the time, man.
All right, man. Take it easy.
All right. Ben Golliver, always the best. Outstanding stuff from Ben Golliver, giving you the latest on what he thinks about the Blazers' moves and more. You'll hear from C.J. McCollum next, as we will give you a big splash. Three random things still in front of us as well. We got to play sports cinema, too. We'll tell you more about that coming up here on The Game.
The one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it. Where? Down there. Must be.
The Big Splash. Brought to you by the experts at Anderson Pool Works, who can make a splash in your life. AndersonPoolWorks.com.
Coming up, we will give away a pair of tickets to WWE Live as we play sports cinema in the final segment. So make sure you have your phones ready for that, and have 417-7575 ready to go as well for your chance to win a pair of tickets. But right now, it is time for the Big Splash. Today's Big Splash comes from the NBA. Obviously, Dwight Howard joining the Houston Rockets. It happened over the weekend, but obviously big because of the announcement late last night, Omer Asik wanting a trade out of town. It'll be interesting to see if he does end up getting out of town. Ben Golliver joined us in the last segment. Doesn't think that Omer Asik is going to get his way, but we'll just have to wait and see what comes out of that situation. And also a bit of an honorable mention as well for Big Splash, the one sports story you need to know about of the day. A lot of discussion around the Hillsboro Hops when the season first started, the fact that they really didn't have any local kids playing as a part of the team. Well, now they've got two. We've had one of them on this show, Braden Shipley, who is playing for this team, the first-round draft pick out of Nevada, and played down in the Medford area, I believe it was, is now a member of the Hillsboro Hops. And also, former Oregon Duck pitcher Jimmy Sherfy has joined the Hillsboro Hops as well. So it was a big thing for me, the fact that there were no local kids on the roster. Now the fact that you have some local talent, guys that you are familiar with, be whether they played in Southern Oregon, they played at one of the colleges here in the state. It's nice to see some local kids making their name here with the Hillsboro Hops, and it certainly chop entices me to go out and check out a game, because now there's some names that I know, some players that I know, as me being someone who is a fan of baseball as a sport, but not deep into the sport.
Yeah, and it gives you a rooting interest, you know, because it's tough with minor league baseball. It's so transient, the baseball rosters.
Yeah.
And it's hard to, you know, follow one player for too long. But those couple of guys, you know, coming in from the Diamondbacks farm system, that's great news.
It really is. So pretty cool there for the Hillsborough Hops that they had Jimmy Sherfy, who has yet to make an appearance. He's rehabbing a hip injury that he suffered here in the last couple months or so. But hopefully Jimmy Sherfy will be making an appearance for the Hillsborough Hops sometime in the near future. Time now to play Three Random Things. Seems like forever since we've done Three Random Things, so it was my goal to get it back on the show here today, because sometimes these are the most wild out there stories that we end up discussing on the show. Wanted to start out with one close to home. It comes from really just down the road here at the Willamette River, as hundreds of people over the weekend gathered to break a world record on the Willamette River. And what they were trying to do were join hands and set what appears to be a new world record. With enough air for 700 floats and enough bodies to fill them, a world record attempt for the longest float line appeared within reach for this group of people. Apparently, I don't know how to pronounce, some town in Italy got 542 people connected in a float line, and Portland has reached 700. So I don't know if the record's been made official yet, but a bunch of people jumped in the Willamette River, grabbed hands while they were on floaties.
You know, I saw that, and I saw that on the news. They did a whole thing on it. I thought it's cool. You know, it's a time of year. It's fun. Let's go do something crazy and maybe set a world record while we're at it.
Something crazy? Getting on floaties in the Willamette River?
It's great. Well, getting in that river is, you know.
That's true.
There are. It doesn't sound crazy, but when you take into the fact that it's that river.
Yeah, Oregon's version of the East River. Yeah. I just remember that Seinfeld episode where Kramer goes and swims in the East River, and every time he's around, everybody just, what is that what is that stench? Gosh, what is that? That's same thing I think of when the Willamette River is so nasty, man. That's dirty, dirty stuff.
There has to be a world record they haven't thought of yet that we could accomplish here at 750. I'm thinking like fastest climb up a flagpole with a chihuahua attached to your ankle or something, like biting your ankle or something. Because the world records nowadays, they're just ridiculous. And like they have a show dedicated to it now, right? Like most pencils jammed into your face in a 10-minute span. You're just like, what?
I'm putting you on that. You're on that, Perkins. You take care of finding out what the world record we need to break is, right?
Okay, sounds good.
All right, so our second of three random things isn't so random. Happens every year in Spain. It is the running of the bulls.
Yes, Pamplona.
This is something that is definitely on my bucket list.
It's insane, dude.
It'd be so much fun. Did you see? There was also some people who, one of the bulls chased them off of a pier or an area right next to water, chased them into the water, and I think the bull ended up going into the water too. I'm not sure if the bull ended up being all right, but it seems like it would be something that would be so much fun to do.
Oh, yeah, no. And when you mentioned bucket list things, that is definitely on my bucket list. I want to go to Pamplona. I want to get chased by an 800-pound bull.
Yeah, I mean,
Does it get any more fun and interesting and crazy than that?
And didn't Chip Kelly, I think Chip Kelly and like Scott Frost and a couple other assistant coaches actually went there in the last couple of years.
Did they run?
And ran with the bulls, Yeah, so I remember, we'll try and find that clip here in the last 18 minutes of the show or so and see if we can find that in our audio archives, because I know he went there in an off season and went and ran with the bulls. So we'll see if we can find that. But, yeah, certainly high on my bucket list of things to do. I don't think Tina would be down for that. I don't think she's going to be interested in possibly.
She'd be fast enough, though, to get away.
She would be fast enough. She'd probably run faster. She runs faster than me nowadays. Maybe not in a sprint, but over long distances. She's got me beat. She went and ran like 8 miles yesterday. I mean.
Yeah. I would have to start running to get in shape. If I knew I was going to go to Pamplona and do that, I'd have to get in shape.
The third of three random things, I should say, and Perkins, monitor this for me here. I'm going to play some audio on my computer, but it comes from, well, an artist who was big in the 1990s. Why don't you pull this down here, and some music's going to start here in a second. Does it ring any bells, Chop? I know this really isn't your genre, but...
Nah, I would say like TLC or something like that.
This is Lauryn Hill. She was part of the Fugees.
Yep, okay.
Lauryn Hill is in jail.
No.
Lauryn Hill is in jail. She went to jail today.
For what?
She went to jail for tax evasion.
Why doesn't that sound shocking?
Why does every celebrity, artist, musician at some point in their life go to jail for tax evasion? Isn't that what Wesley Snipes went to jail for?
Isn't that what they pay their accountants to keep them away from?
So she supposedly failed to pay over $1 million in taxes over the course of the last decade. $1.8 million that she earned between 2005 and 2007. And I guess during a hearing on April 22nd, a judge gave Hill until May 3rd to pay $500,000 if she wanted to avoid incarceration. She did not pay the money and decided to go to jail for 3 months. She held a concert over the weekend and
this morning
reported for jail in Connecticut. So she is in jail for the next 3 months.
She did a show, her Before I Go to Jail show.
All right. So the before you go to jail show, how much do you charge per ticket?
Oh, I'd probably charge, you know, it's going to be good. $50-$60.
She charged $85 a ticket minimum.
Oh boy. Yeah, she can't really afford to pay taxes.
So my thing is some of these artists like her, I would love to listen to her if she in concert if she's playing her old stuff. Like, she hasn't done anything relevant in the past 15 years, but her old stuff is incredible. And that's some of the thing, and you could probably relate to this, Chop, is you have an album that you really like of somebody, but the time that they're coming around in concert, you missed it when they were playing that album. So now they're playing the next album you don't like that much. So you only get to hear two songs off the album that you really like,
sure.
And you get to hear all the crap that they're playing now.
Oh, yeah.
And
it gets worse when the bands have actually had 3, 4, 5 albums. Because when you want to hear them do a couple of old cuts, they're probably, you're not going to hear them.
Yeah. I mean, this song from Lauryn Hill is absolutely awesome. It's called Everything is Everything. And for whatever reason, it was one of my jams
it's
when
your
I was
go-to,
in middle school.
Yeah, it's your go-to, I'm holding hands with a girl song.
So for those that say they don't know anything about me, you can say that in middle school, I love Lauryn Hill's Everything is Everything, and you can take that for what it's worth. All right, coming up in our final segment, we're going to play sports cinema for a pair of tickets to WWE Live at the Rose Garden Friday, August 16th. The way this works, you call up, guess what the movie clip is, all right? This is a Chop movie clip, okay?
It's classic.
It's not an easy one, but we encourage you to call in knowing that Chop grabbed the clip. And it's a sport that Chop is very passionate about that is the focus of the movie.
Don't drop any hints.
All right. 503-417-7575. 417-7575. Your chance to win a pair of tickets next here on the Bald Faced Truth, the game. Sports cinema coming up here momentarily on the Bald Faced Truth as we get set for the last segment of the show. Fletcher Johnson, Brian Perkins, and Chop, producer Chop, here with us. We'll play sports cinema, so light up the phone lines now, 417-7575. Your chance to win tickets to WWE's brand new show, WWE Live, Friday, August 16th at the Rose Garden. It's your chance to see your favorite WWE superstars live in action. So we'll play sports cinema here momentarily. Chop, before we do that, though, we've got to talk about this plane crash over the weekend in San Francisco.
Nutty.
There's a part of me that wonders how this... After watching and kind of hearing how everything went down, how this doesn't happen more often. I mean, this is the first major jumbo jet airline accident that we've had in the United States in really over a decade. Two people died, and numerous are hurt. So it's really interesting to see, this situation go down. What did you see? And I mean, it's amazing. I mean, it doesn't make you necessarily want to go get on a plane.
No. And, you know, when I first heard about it, I'm like, you know, obviously insane. It's horrible. You don't like to hear about any tragedies of that nature. And somebody tweeted a woman who must have been watching from afar. She actually caught the plane landing.
Oh, yeah.
On a picture, and she tweeted it. But, you know, to find out that it was a training flight, the pilot was learning and, you know, still in training, that was a bit hard to take.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see. They said he had like 77,000 hours or something of training, but that he'd never flown into San Francisco International Airport before. And that's like Oakland. It's right there on the bay,
yep.
And you're landing right on. And I think the thing that shocked me the most was the firsthand video that some guy took over on the other side of the bay that CNN had showed the plane coming down. You could tell it was coming down really slow. And then you kind of see it hit the ground and go along, and you see some smoke start to trail up. But then at one point, one of the wings goes down, and the whole plane comes up in the air and then slams down again. And a lot of people said right off the bat, it sounds like there's not a lot of injuries, and we don't know of anybody who has perished. We know that two people did end up dying, but numerous people supposedly with major spinal injuries, breaks in their spinal cord, things like that. So this is a more serious, ongoing situation. But in the grand scheme of things, it turned out to be a lot better than it could have been, because usually you see something like this and you look at the plane with it all charred out on the top due to the fire. Amazing that pretty much everybody walked out of there alive, but still very tragic that two people did perish in what was something that was incredible to watch the firsthand video and kind of watch it unfold over the weekend. But let's switch on to more happier topics now with a little bit of sports cinema.
Super.
Grab your milk duds, butter the popcorn, and suck on this licorice.
Smashing baby.
It's the sports cinema on the Bald-Faced Truth.
And action.
417-7575. If you want to line up, take a listen to this clip. See if you recognize it.
What's up?
Let's start it over here as we're now ready to go.
What's going on?
Shaking brain.
What's up?
It's when you try to make a solo breakaway and you got a wheel sucker hanging on, so you shake and break them, shake them off.
Wheel sucker? What's a wheel sucker?
It's when someone drafts all the time and he won't take his turn up front.
Look at him. Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Hey, you wheel sucker! Get up there!
People know this.
All right, we got people calling in. One gentleman already on hold, though. So we will go out to him first. Chop, you brought this movie to my attention.
That's right, and 80s movie.
You were loving this clip as it was playing live, right? All right, so the winner will get a pair of tickets to check out WWE's brand new show, WWE Live, Friday, August 16th. At the Rose Garden. So in order of longest wait, let's go out to Stan in Vancouver. Stan, what do you think the movie is?
Man, that was hard to hit. I have no idea. I'm just going to go on a random guess, kicking and screaming.
All right, well, that is unfortunately incorrect.
Yeah.
We appreciate the phone call as... Not the correct answer from Stan. We will play it one more time. He said it was a bit hard to hear, so let's go ahead and play it one more time for you.
What's going on?
Shaking brain.
What's up?
It's when you try to make a solo breakaway and you got a wheel sucker hanging on, so you shake and break them. Shake them off.
Wheel sucker? What's a wheel sucker?
It's when someone drafts all the time and he won't take his turn up front.
Look at him. Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So this is an 80s movie, right, Chop?
Yep,
80s. That's what we're dealing with?
Yeah.
Okay. So back out to the phone lines. Rob in Vancouver has called in. Rob, what's your guess?
I have no idea, but I'm going to guess Days of Thunder.
All right, that is incorrect. Good effort. Nice try. All right, so Travis and Sandy next up. Travis, what's your guess?
First, I got to give props to Chop because that is an awesome movie. That's American Flyers with Kevin Costner.
Yeah! There it is. Travis and Sandy, winner of a pair of tickets to check out WWE's brand new show, WWE Live. How do you know that movie? Have you seen it?
Oh, yeah. I own it.
You
Attaboy.
Own it.
Attaboy.
All right.
Attaboy. Hey, do you own it on beta?
No.
Travis.
Lucky Buys got it on the $5 bin.
I love it, Travis. Well, congratulations. Stay on the line. Chop will get your information. We'll get you those tickets to WWE Live at the Rose Garden on Friday, August 16th. All right, that does it for us. One show in the books this week. I'll be back the rest of the week for Canzano here on the Bald-Faced Truth, noon to 3. Want to thank our guest, Justin Hopkins of 24/7 Sports, Pac-12 recruiting guru, and also NBA writer for SI.com and Blazers Edge, Ben Golliver, for joining us. We'll have a dynamite show lined up for you tomorrow. Leave it here. Flight 750 with Chad doing a great show coming up next here on Sports Radio 750 The Game.